Hey, welcome back to Past Gas. This week we are telling a really interesting story about a guy who used to be super duper famous. It's the one and only Jesse James and West Coast Choppers.
For how fraught this guy is, he did do a lot of cool stuff. That is not to say that he is a saint by any means, but he is such a hustler. He was a roadie for Nirvana back in the day.
Yeah, crazy.
Started making choppers, became hugely successful, got in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, put it lightly.
But it was really interesting to learn about him, so I hope you enjoy it.
June 22nd, 2002. Heavy metal music pounds during the final scene of Discovery Channel's newest show, Monster Garage. A sparkling green 1994 Ford Mustang idles in a grass field next to a 7-gang tractor mower. Suddenly, the Mustang doors fly open, revealing spinning blades that drop to the grass, and a 3-blade mower deck lowers from beneath its rear bumper. A blonde woman in a cowboy hat waves the checkered flag. The industrial farming tool and the 200-horsepower turf-slashing lawn rocket burst forward in the most ludicrous and unlikely drag race ever. Behind the wheel of the monster mowing Mustang is host of the show, Jesse James. Unbeknownst to Jesse and the producers, this absurd show is about to change TV forever. Monster Garage was a groundbreaking overnight sensation, creating a new genre of reality TV and thrusting Jesse James into the limelight as its on-screen personality. But it was his off-screen personality that sullied his reputation and showed the world who he truly was. Today on Past Gas, how did the descendant of a famous outlaw build a motorcycle empire and revolutionize reality TV? Why is he so problematic? And where is he now? This week, it's Monster, Monster, Monster Garage, and West Coast Choppers.
It just made me realize how, like, outlaws of the cowboy era would be influencers nowadays.
Dude, absolutely. Listen, right? Bring back the, like, the cowboys of the Wild West.
Yeah.
Not present day cowboys. Those guys are cool, but
we tied this woman to the railroad tracks as a prank.
Yeah. Oh my God, that'd be crazy. Never mind, I take it back.
Mr. Beast selling snake oil.
Like literal snake oil?
Yeah.
How do you get oil out of a snake? Do you just go...
You wring them out. Yeah. You go take it, the head and the tail, roll it.
Yeah, yeah. And
then, oh,
extra virgin olive oil.
Oh, yeah. That's like a Shrek bit.
Yeah. Almost. Oh yeah.
Welcome back to Past Gas, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes. This week we're exploring a topic that my co-host across from me probably is too young to remember. We got Stephanie Gutierrez.
That's hello. Not, I know about Jesse James.
Okay, good. Good.
I don't know how much of a dickhead he is.
Okay,
was.
Cool. And Joe Weber.
What up, snake oil people? Get your oil out.
Get your oil out. Steph, you were born in 2003.
Wow, bold.
Wrong.
2002. Okay.
Oh, nice. So, hey, you were close enough.
This show, sorry, I just kicked a trash. We have a trash can just hanging out under a desk. So the show aired the same year you were born. Crazy. Wow.
Monumental time.
I feel old. I'm gonna feel old, I think, talking about this. Because I remember when this show, first of all, I was like 10 when the show came out.
Yeah.
And I remember watching, I loved Monster Garage. I remember watching the original documentary, Motorcycle Madness on Discovery, that like kind of launched this whole thing. We'll get into that. This is definitely a part of my childhood right here that we're talking about. I'm really excited.
I had to do a refresher because I watched it when it came out, but then it's been 20 years since I watched it. So I was like, I gotta watch an episode. And I did watch this Mustang one. And no one, like Jesse and his crew knew what they were doing, but like, the producers of the show had no idea. And it's just like grainy footage, mm-hmm. not very stable. And now knowing how much work you guys do on cars here, they did insane amounts of work for the stupidest builds. Yeah. And they're just like, oh, this doesn't work. We have to like spend another 4 days figuring out how to make these blades drop down from the doors.
Yeah. How do we put a wood chipper in a PT Cruiser? It was like
insane.
Was this before Pimp My Ride? I want to say it was.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
This is like 3 or 4 years before
Pimp My
Ride. Crazy.
I mean, this really was on the cutting edge of reality TV back in the day.
But
and
they also did like crazy dangerous shit. Like just Jesse James is a weird character. Like he's just, the more that we read about it, you'll understand.
I was reading some news articles before we got going, and it's just really obviously complicated guy. Yeah. And what we say that because, you know, 10 years ago, he got busted for being in pictures with like doing Nazi salutes and yeah. wearing Nazi memorabilia and stuff like that. So I don't want to downplay.
Cheated on Sandra Bullock.
Cheated on Sandra Bullock.
Sweetheart of the Nation.
Yeah.
That's the biggest issue in my eyes. Yes. She's hot.
Yeah. You can't, I mean, you just can't do that, any of that. And but the more you learn about him and you're just, oh, this guy's messed up.
The one scene that really painted a picture of who he was in this episode, they're like, the whole crew is just not sleeping. They're like welding all through the night, making this stupid Mustang. And there's like literally cots in this one room in a shop because they had to just like sleep at some point. And one of the guys is like sleeping the only probably like 2 hours that he could find that they weren't fabbing stuff up. And Jesse James brings his crotch rocket into the cot room and just starts doing this burnout and like smashing into this guy's cot. And like just messing with him. And I think it's the same stuff that made Donut really fun in our early days where we're like just going crazy trying to put this content together. And like people are sleeping on the couch and people are just, you know, James is f***ing with them or something. It felt like that, but like way more shitty.
Yeah, a little more aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It is annoying. Not annoying. I mean, it is disappointing that all that other stuff would eventually happen with Jesse James, because I do have very fond memories of watching this show and being like, dude, this is the coolest thing ever. Choppers are awesome.
Yeah.
I love, yeah, those early Monster Garage builds like the Mustang are just kind of burned into my head and definitely, I think, helped fuel my interest in cars, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Complicated feelings on this one.
It's funny that we have watched the show and we were fans back in the day. Stephanie is the only one that actually has like an anecdote about Jesse James.
I do.
Her friend worked for him.
Really?
I know. Yeah. I know someone who like ended up being called on to help out for like, I was telling Joe, like it was like the school bus shit that they built.
Pontoon boat school bus.
Okay. Yeah. And?
And I trust my source because he was there and he's a very nice, sweet guy. But he's like, yeah, he's like, I just gave like a suggestion on where they should put like an ECU or some shit. And this dude, Jesse James, kept being a dick to me, like, oh no, that's a stupid idea. We're not going to do it there. And then they like put the ECU where they wanted and they were like, wait a second, that's not a good idea. That's where water is going to get in there. And it's like, yeah, no shit. Yeah. Like, and to this day, like, shout out to my homie. I'm not going to name him because that's kind of fucked up.
Protect their identity. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's like, Jesse James is such dick. He was such a dick. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, I believe you.
And it's apparent from the shows. Like he's kind of a scumbag.
It's interesting. You watch back those clips and you're like, even with the presence of cameras around, you're like, he's being very aggressive.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. It's just it was just a different time, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're like, this guy's a dick.
That's why they say never meet your heroes.
Oh, he's your hero?
No, but I mean, no one's saying that.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
he didn't, you know?
Yeah.
He f***ed with him in a sense. Like, he liked the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
Probably was excited for the opportunity to work with them, right? And then, yeah.
Yeah.
It's treated like that. Interesting.
Well, before we jump into it, we do have a road trip snack to review today.
Our continuing
road snack. Dude, that's so good.
Okay.
This rodent snack comes from Audrey Holden, our producer and writer. She got it at Eataly, which is Mario Batali's thing.
Yep.
Very fancy.
These are San Carlo pesto flavored potato chips.
Ooh. All right.
Are you a pesto fan, Stephanie?
I can't say that I'm not, but the pesto that I've had maybe hasn't been the best. But then again, I don't think it's Italians making that pesto. That I've
So we're going to eat these chips and then we're going to give them a rating from 1 to 10 based on specific parameters about how easy they are to eat on a road trip, how, you know, dirty your fingertips get.
Yep.
Guest of honor.
Oh my God, thank
you
so much.
Gets the pesto. Yummy, yummy.
It smells really good.
Yeah, let's get a little. Oh, that's a good pesto scent there. Audrey, did get yourself a bag of these? Or okay, well, make sure to save some for you.
That's a good chip.
Mmm.
Damn. That's so good. I could eat that whole bag.
I love pesto. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know this was... Oh, my God. It's like having a pesto dinner in a bag, dude.
So, I'm tasting every part of the pesto. I'm tasting the pine nuts, the garlic, the basil, olive oil in there.
Mm.
It pops.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Pair that with a San Pellegrino, like lemon soda.
Limoncello.
You guys are so fancy.
Yeah, if you're in
I'm bougie. All right.
If you're in your Fiat 124...
Yeah, dude.
Driving down Cinque Terre.
That is so
good. Open top Alpha, eating these potato chips. That's a pleasant day.
That's a good snack.
Now, any more before I give them to Audrey?
I want just one more.
I want some more.
I mean, two.
It's got these chips got me feeling like I gotta pull out one of these bad boys.
So good. Good dust factor on there. That's gonna get all over your steering wheel.
Yeah, but not greasy though.
Not greasy.
These, I think. America has gone crazy with the kettle chip fad, and kettle chips are very greasy. This feels more like, it's not air fried, but it's not greasy.
No, those are really good.
It's like an oven baked
chip. Yeah,
you will.
I would give that, man, that's a strong like 7 out of 10 for me.
Seven?
That's a really good snack. I just want to eat that whole bag.
Yeah, I'd give it like a 7.4. I definitely want to eat the whole bag. As a road trip snack, though. If I continue eating those for a long time, I'm going to have a stomach ache. That's the only place I would dock points from.
You guys, I don't know what the bar is to get a 10, but this is like an 8 for me. That was good freaking chip.
Yeah. I think those Japanese chips we had, the pizza chips last week, those are very good.
Those are very good.
Wait, pizza chips?
Yeah.
We had pizza I missed chips. Out on the pizza you chips. Did. Damn it.
That was when Phil was here. Sorry, they were good.
That's right.
I'm going to get you guys some like Filipino ham and cheese chips. Those are so freaking good.
Please do.
I love flavored, like crazy flavored chips, dill pickle, hot dog with ketchup and mustard chips they sell in Canada are really good.
I'm going to give you a bonus snack. I had sunflower seeds on my way up to Tascadero last weekend. I'm going to give that a strong, like, not filling, which I think is kind of good, actually.
That's good. I like that.
You're just like you're doing a task with
because
your mouth.
You're gonna stop at In-N-Out on a road trip
exactly
and Santa so Barbara. you don't want to be too full
this is just like something to do with your mouth.
That's crazy. That is
please
so
no
crazy.
One clip that and
but you do need to you need edit. To have another apparatus to spit your seeds into.
That's the thing.
And I had a can which was not very good.
No, like, and then they stick to your lip. I love seeds though. Cracked pepper. So good.
Pepper is good.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
Shall we get into Jesse James? I'm feeling fired up today about this.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go. Jesse James, named after the famous outlaw with whom he is distantly related, or so he says. Was born on April 19th, 1969, and grew up in Long Beach, California. And just like the motorcycles he'd go on to build, his upbringing custom built him into the ideal turn-of-the-millennium TV star, for better or for worse. Jesse grew up in a family with a strong connection to the automotive world. His father, Larry James, owned an antique business and had a knack for building and restoring vintage cars. Coincidentally, his business partner and Jesse's godfather was Barry Weiss, who would go on to star in the reality show Storage Wars.
I love that show. I love that show. You know what guy I can't stand, though?
Yup.
Which one?
Yup.
Him. Mm-hmm.
Dude, that guy needs it. Also, he is just the worst self-promoter, too. He has his business like on his hat and his shirt, but it's just like... Like, doesn't you go on a template and use, like, Times New Roman and put your stuff on.
Yeah, no pizzazz.
Yeah.
Anytime I have a storage unit, and anytime I go over to the storage place, I'm always in my head like, yep. So Jesse developed a fascination with mechanics from a young age and said his earliest memory of being a builder was his obsession with Legos. But it was a specific event that sparked his passion for motorcycles. He was in the car with his dad on the highway when they were surrounded by a gang of choppers. The powerful machines surrounded them on all sides, like in that one Dodge commercial where they surround the Hemi truck. Then they tore off up the road. heading toward unknown adventure, it left a lasting mark on young Jesse. Spending time in his father's shop and watching him work on cars fueled James's interest in mechanics. Fostering his unofficial education further was the fact that they shared a warehouse with a man named Perry Sands, who was starting up his new business, Performance Machine.
There's no better Long Beach name than Perry Sands.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Doesn't sound real.
Perry Sands. Later, this company would become a leading manufacturer of motorcycle parts, and Perry would be inducted into the Motorcycle Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Jesse's early exposure to the intricate workings of mechanics fostered a natural talent for working with his hands. And by the time he was a teenager, James was already showing an aptitude for his craft and for business. His first attempt at customization was modifying a dirt bike he bought cheap at a swap meet. He was shocked when an eager buyer gave him $850 for it. But there are many more twists, turns, and bumps in the road before he would make it big.
All it takes is that one dirt bike.
Yep. As a kid, Jesse struggled with school. He found it boring and difficult, often clashing with teachers and authorities. It didn't help that his closest role model, his father, while a furniture dealer on the level, was also a big-time drug dealer.
That makes sense.
He would even use his pieces as a means to transport the drugs. That's insane.
He's kind of a real one, not gonna lie.
It kind of makes more sense.
He's a businessman, too.
Hey, why do all these Ottomans have mirrors installed on them? Jesse managed to find a healthy outlet for his rebellious nature and strong-willed personality on the football field. As an adult, he stood 6'3", weighing 230 pounds.
What?
And he wasn't much smaller in his peewee football days. I didn't know he was that big.
Isn't that crazy? I didn't
realize
he
was... Why does the camera... I thought he was shorter for some reason.
I know.
That's why he's so menacing.
I guess so. For some reason, I thought he was like, okay, that's great. 6'3", 230. Damn. Yeah. Opposing parents were so blown away by Jesse's size and tenacity that they forced him to slash his pads, believing that he packed them with sand. That's a thing you can do?
I didn't know that.
That's insane. In his senior year, Jesse was receiving recruiting letters from every top college program and named a Parade magazine All-American. Unfortunately, though, his off-field antics came back to bite him at the worst possible time. I remember Parade magazine. I remember, okay, so I'd read Parade every Sunday because it came with our newspaper. And I remember,
that's why I know it.
Yeah. It was just like a, it was like a mixed bag kind of magazine. There'd be like recipes in there, but also like celebrity news and like regular news stories and then coupons in the back or something.
It's an all-in-one. That's genius.
Yeah, it was like everything. But I remember I would read that every morning as a kid because I loved to read. And I remember I'd be talking to one of my boys, Andrew. I'd be like talking about movies coming out and like actors that are in them. He's like, why do you know all these actors' names? Who are these people? How do you know this? And I was like, I don't know. I just read Parade magazine, dude. Like,
that's so funny. Yeah. Emily's dad is like... He's a little older. He's like 82, but he's super with it. And he doesn't talk much, but he knows every actor's name and he's seen every movie 10 times. And so we were all packed in my dad's van in Tucson over the weekend. I got married, by the way, last weekend.
Wow.
So we were all in this van and there's like,
that's some big news that you just dropped on us. And then you just, anyways, we're in this van.
But I was like, oh, this is like Little Miss Sunshine. And just from nowhere in the back.
He's like, Paul Dano, great actor.
No, he goes, oh, Abigail Breslin. I wonder what she's up to now. And I'm like, what? And I had to think about it for a second. I was like, oh, yeah, that was a little girl in that movie.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It seemed that the proclivities of Jesse's criminal ancestor had trickled down four generations because Jesse and his friend's favorite pastime was stealing.
Stealing's pretty fun, though.
That's pretty lit, actually. Yeah. As a kid, you're going to tell me you didn't, like, steal anything?
I was a klepto.
Didn't I tell you guys the story about being afraid of getting... Oh, yeah.
It's been past 7 years, so the statute of limitations is gone, but me and a Pokemon shop opened, like, video games and Pokemon cards when it was really popping off in, like, the early 2000s. And I wore my baggiest pants and had my friend... challenged the guy to like Super Smash Bros. In the back.
Damn, that's a so the good owner of the shop, ass distraction.
The owner of the shop was like, yeah, I'll beat you. And they like really talk shit to like get him into it. And then I just took all the like jewel cases with the holographic Charizards in
them. Oh my God.
Stuff them into my cargo pants and then just got the fuck out of there.
You're such a real one. What happened to those? Those are worth a lot now.
They're still.
They're paying for Wyatt's college.
Fund. Yeah. I actually don't know where they are.
Damn. I love that for you. I also stole Pokemon cards, but from Walgreens.
Oh, sick. Mm-hmm. That's better. I feel bad screwing over a small business
owner.
Yeah,
he's a small business owner. Yeah. Too riled up to beat you.
When you're
11,
though, it's like everything's the same.
We should pay it forward. We should pay it back, not forward. Go back there.
And right your wrongs.
Yeah.
Pay it back.
Pay it back, yeah.
He's going to be like, all right, you owe me $8,000 for that shit.
Yeah. All right, so Jesse and his boys robbed a burger stand to buy school clothes and held contests over who could steal the most stuff from Radio Shack.
That's actually a good.
I love that. Radio
that's a good
Shack?
Mark.
Okay.
I miss Radio Shack. They also stole cars, often straight off dealership lots.
Damn.
Jesse got so good he could hotwire a car in 30 seconds. He even stole a Porsche from a former Olympian, Scott Hamilton.
Damn.
And 20 years later, Jesse became a contestant on The Celebrity Apprentice in order to apologize to Scott Hamilton.
See, if Jesse could do it and go back and apologize, you can too.
Yeah.
That's true, dude.
You just have to get on, like, I don't know, MasterChef with the owner of the Pokemon shop.
The incident that did him in, though, was when Jesse assaulted a clerk at 7-Eleven.
Oh, man.
Police pulled him out of class later that day, and he spent 90 days in jail. He missed the end of the football season, and all of his scholarship offers were rescinded. He attended junior college, but blew out his knee in a game, and that was the end of his football career.
I think if he went into the NFL, he would probably be defense for the Bengals or the Raiders. Both of those teams are pretty violent.
Oh, yeah. I could see the Raiders for sure.
Jesse James played as an outside linebacker at Riverside City College in Riverside, where you currently go.
Whoa. That's so crazy.
Holy shit. That was his JUCO years?
Yeah.
I should go like do some drills on the football ladders. Field for the one time for him.
That's crazy. Wow. It's all coming together. In 1988, barely out of high school and with his pro football dreams dashed, James ended up working as a bodyguard for rock bands. For a few years, he traveled around the world touring with bands like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Slayer, and Soundgarden.
That's a great lineup.
Yeah, some big names.
Dude, that's sick. I love Soundgarden, man. And Pearl Jam. Ooh. Yeah.
That could have been you, Nolan.
I do not like Red Hot Chili Peppers. And while he knew that the music industry wasn't for him, he used it as an opportunity for research, visiting every motorcycle shop and show in every country he visited, developing taste and building relationships that became beneficial later on.
That's actually pretty sick.
It's very smart. A second injury led to a second career change when he dislocated his elbow attempting to stage dive, which limited his bodyguard capabilities.
You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, you're not the rock stars, dude. You're the bodyguard.
So he decided to make another leap into the world of motorcycle building. First, he enrolled yet again at Riverside Community College in their welding program, where he honed his skills and developed a deep understanding of metalwork. After that, he took a job with a few industry legends. First, his dad's old buddy, Perry, at the now super successful Performance Machine, where he honed his CNC machining knowledge. Then, at Hot Rods by Boyd. That would be Boyd Coddington, a leader in custom wheels and a fellow Discovery Channel star later on.
I wonder if that was his foot in the door.
Maybe. These early professional experiences were humble but formative, as welding would become one of his primary skills. Jesse's expertise in metal forming would become one of his great differentiators as a motorcycle builder. The seeds of Jesse's business began to sprout while working for Boyd. The latest bike trend was double-wide tires. Jesse noticed the poor quality of the fenders he was installing and thought, hey, I can make something better than this. So he began welding fenders of his own after work in his mom's garage, selling them for $800.
Wow.
While making $700 a week at his day job, he was suddenly making $15,000 a week at his side hustle.
Oh my God.
West Coast Choppers was born.
That's nuts. Wow. Just out of little sheet metal?
Dude, this is fascinating so far.
Yeah.
He's kind of like he's kind of business savvy. Truly.
Oh, yeah. Looking for that.
And just the fact that he had the wherewithal to, like, on tour with the Red Hot Chili Peppers, like, go scout out motorcycle shows.
I know.
And, like, see what's going on around the country.
Especially in an environment like that, it must be so easy just to be distracted and just like party, basically.
Oh yeah, with when Flea's like, "Hey man, take this bong." Like, no, I gotta go check out Fenders.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
Unlike many business startups, James didn't take out loans to get West Coast Choppers off the ground. Instead, he reinvested every dollar he made back into the business.
That's smart, too.
By the early 90s, he was selling straight to distributors who often scoffed at the WCC brass tags on all of his pieces. Who did this one-man operation think he was? But his reputation as a talented builder started to grow locally, and word spread about the high-quality parts he was creating. Jesse says he finally knew the business could be successful when he received a purchase order of $125,000 worth of Fenders. An extremely tall order for one person, but he figured it out. What started as a small, low-budget operation soon grew into a well-known brand. Once he began building entire custom motorcycles, combining his unique aesthetics with functionality, West Coast Choppers rose up to the top of the custom bike world. James's bikes became known for their aggressive industrial designs, often featuring long, low frames and bold sweeping lines. They were works of art, blending form and function seamlessly. His creations were more than just motorcycles, though. They were expressions of freedom and rebellion, much like the man himself. Mm. While Jesse was busy building, he noticed an increased demand for the West Coast Choppers brand beyond just bikes. Like fans of rock bands and sporting teams, people wanted to rep WCC even if they couldn't afford a bike. Initially, he started out printing a few t-shirts with the West Coast Choppers logo to sell at the shop. But as the brand's popularity grew, so did the demand for merch, and soon he was selling to retailers. West Coast Choppers was the big man on campus in the motorcycle community, but in 2000, they were discovered by mainstream America. Yeah. Discovered. Capital D.
Capital D. You see where that's going, right?
I do.
The success of West Coast Choppers eventually caught the attention of TV producer Tom Beers and his bosses at Discovery Channel. That's a sick name.
Tom Beers.
I have Tom Beers. Are you saying 10?
Tommy Brewski. What's up, buddy?
Oh, man, that's good.
That is such a good nickname.
My friend Darren's older brother was like super cool when we were growing up, and he... his rapper name was Bobby Brewski.
Bobby Brewski. I was thinking about this the other day. Sorry to get in on a digression here, but like, it's funny looking back how like your friend's older siblings will like sometimes set the, they're kind of your barometer for
taste.
What's cool.
Yeah.
They set your taste. Like,
absolutely.
It's like, man, Matt and John, they think this band's so sick. And even like 10 years later or 20 years later, I'm like, yeah, dude, this band is sick because they said so. But in retrospect, it's like, no, they were like 17.
Yeah.
I'm like in my 30s now. They didn't know shit.
But
they're 17.
That's the reason that everyone thinks that everything was better when they were 14 is because that's when you like form your tastes.
Yeah, yeah.
And that your tastes don't really change that much.
Like they didn't know what the rest of your life. They were talking about. No, they lived in the same town I did. They were just older.
Beers would prove to have a knack for creating compelling reality programming in the male-driven automotive and industrial genres, but back in 1999, the only reality programming on American televisions was The Real World on MTV, so the idea of documenting the life of a custom motorcycle builder was a shot in the dark. Jesse claims that he learned the doc was happening when he was clearing out the desk of an employee he had just fired and found a post-it note that read, "Discovery Shoot. Call ASAP." He called the number and discovered that they were coming to film the next day.
Oh, good.
Damn. Real quick.
It's pretty cool of him to just make room in his schedule.
Yeah. The resulting documentary titled Motorcycle Mania, which Nolan referred to before, gave viewers a behind-the-scenes look at James's world. Viewers were captivated from the very start. Jesse roaring down the highway on a purple chopper, narration by Beers.
"This is Jesse James, and his talent is bending metal, arc welding, and making chrome sing."
The doc showcased his talents as a builder, pounding and welding sheet metal into a gorgeous gas tank. The transformation felt like a magic trick. His rebellious, larger-than-life personality was on display, and the co-stars included fighting pit bulls, sharks, and topless models. Of course you fought pit bulls. Why wouldn't he?
Oh my God, that is such an incredible...
I remember all this, man. Like, yeah. I remember there's a part where his wife, his first wife, is in the show, and she like seems so normal by comparison. It's like insane.
Audiences were captivated by the raw, gritty world of custom motorcycles. Discovery's previous most popular show was a documentary about the life of Jesus, prompting many to proclaim that Jesse was bigger than Jesus.
That's insane. That's an insane mantra. Yeah.
I think I remember that too.
I remember that too. Yeah. It was on all the time.
Yeah.
The success of the documentary led to two more installments, Motorcycle Mania 2 and 3, solidifying Jesse James as a pop culture icon. But more importantly to Jesse, business was booming. WCC apparel was flying off the shelves. What began as a small side business exploded into a mainstream fashion trend and multi-million dollar venture. The Maltese Cross logo, hanging in thousands of Hot Topics and Walmarts, became a symbol of the custom bike world and a badge of honor for those who wore it.
Mm.
It is a badge.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure is.
As West Coast Choppers became a household name, the motorcycles began attracting the attention of high-profile clients. Jesse's craftsmanship, combined with his rugged outlaw image, appealed to many in Hollywood and beyond. His big break came when he built a bike for Keanu Reeves.
Oh. Which
I really want to get Keanu Reeves on the big three.
That'd be amazing.
Keanu, if you're listening to this and somehow Googling yourself, even though I don't think he ever does that, please hit us up at passgas@donutmedia.com. Yeah. Keanu's bike put James in the spotlight, and soon other stars like Shaq, Kid Rock, and Tyson Beckford came knocking on Jesse's garage door. Owning a West Coast Chopper became a rite of passage for pro wrestling stars of the era, including Diamond Dallas Page, Steve Austin, and The Big Show.
Mm.
Love me some Steve Austin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's more Hulk. What is Steve Austin?
Stone Cold Steve Austin. Dude, today I'm on an accent.
Last time? You got it.
Horrible.
You're getting into it.
Thank you.
These celebrities considered the minimum $50,000 price tag and year-long building process worth it. Each of these bikes were one of a kind, tailored specifically to the client. Shaq's chopper was 11 and a half feet long.
Damn, this seems big.
Holy. That's what she said.
Down to the smallest detail, showcasing James's meticulous craftsmanship. But they all featured his trademark six-shooter riser covers. I do remember that. Six-shooter revolver. I love that's pretty sick touch, honestly.
It is.
Sometimes it was the bikes James didn't build that got him the most attention. He made waves when he refused to build a bike for Fred Durst Durst attempted to jump the line.
Oh.
He also refused to build a bike for Sylvester Stallone because he wanted it painted yellow.
Mm.
Apparently, Jesse James doesn't like yellow.
I can respect that. Yellow's kind of an ugly color for a chopper.
Yeah, it is.
Damn, I feel like Durst and Jesse would be boys, though, man.
I know. But I could see, like, you gotta respect the line, dude.
Of course, dude. Fred, what were you doing, man?
Yeah. Like an exclusive nightclub, the rejections just made West Coast Choppers more popular.
Like that one club in Berlin.
I know which one you're talking about.
Is it Bergane?
They don't let people in. Yeah. That's their whole thing.
You have to you have to be dressed a certain way. You have to like be a local, low key. They don't let foreigners in.
Really?
Or anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah, Bergane. Nailed it.
Nice.
Wow. Why do I know that?
Abigail Breslin.
Unsurprisingly, Discovery was eager to ride the success of Motorcycle Mania, and Tommy Buzz, saw an opportunity to create a whole new kind of reality show. That creation was a little thing called Monster Garage.
Monster Garage.
The concept for Monster Garage was simple but bold. Take an ordinary vehicle and in 5 days transform it into an extraordinary monster machine that could perform a completely different function than what it was originally designed for.
And completely ruin the car.
Yeah, absolutely. For example, turning a school bus into a party boat or a hearse into a working dragster. Jesse would team up with a rotating cast of expert mechanics, engineers, and fabricators, including Bill Hines from episode 261 that we just covered.
It's a cool dude.
All working together under a strict time limit and budget. Whether they succeeded or not, drama and mayhem always follow.
Oh, you know it does.
Yeah, that's right. The format was designed to mimic the real high-pressure and high-stakes scenarios featured in Motorcycle Mania. James's presence as the leader of each team added an element of intensity, as he was known for his, we'll say, no-nonsense approach and uncompromising standards. The team was given only a $3,000 budget.
That's crazy.
Which forced them to find creative ways to get the necessary parts and materials for the transformation.
But you know, like at this time, you could find a Fox body for like $500 or something.
Oh, yeah. No problem. Yeah. As the build progressed, various challenges and setbacks inevitably arose, and tension built as the deadline approached, culminating in a test of the finished machine to see if it actually worked. Man, this show was on at the same time as Junkyard Wars.
Yeah, I love Junkyard Wars.
Over on TLC.
Also good
show. I loved Junkyard Wars, dude. That was the best show. Oh, man. This is also crazy. Little side note. I went to my parents' house this weekend. My mom's trying to get me to take stuff that I left there, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's been the last 15 years of my parents.
It's a little harder for you since they live all the way out.
Well, now they're like, well, drive it out to you. We got a van now. And it's like, I don't want that shit. Please.
My mom, she said, take your Legos home. Like, I still have my Lego box and it's in my truck right now because I just got to take it into my place. But like, this was all happening around that same time, watching the show, watching Junkyard Wars, playing with Legos.
Oh,
like,
man,
I'm going through it, man. I'm going through it. That's crazy. That's so cool. So awesome. So if the team and build succeeded, the team won a $3,400 set of Mac tools. I remember that now.
That's fire.
These episodes ended with an exhilarating display of the vehicle in action, such as driving the cars off-road, competing in a demolition derby, or the aforementioned lawnmower race. I remember they made one where it was like a high-speed line painting car, and they took it to like an oval and sprayed the paint on the track and it just looked like shit, but still kind of cool. Other notable successes included converting a 1950s milk truck into a mobile milking machine.
That is so freaking
That's
crazy.
That's hilarious. And a flying Panos Esperante, which is featured on 60 Minutes. I'm Morley Schaefer. The failure, Andy Rooney's like, what's the deal with these flying cars? Why are we in a hurry? I love 60 Minutes. The failures, though, were just as entertaining. If the machine didn't meet its performance goals, Jesse would call in the heavy machinery and destroy it.
Yeah.
But he didn't just send it to the scrap heap. Some notable failures was when they couldn't get a DeLorean hovercraft off the ground. I remember that one. So it got crushed by a tank. Or when a Mazda Miata sunk as a jet ski. So Jesse blew it up with dynamite.
Damn, don't let Jimmy see that one. He'll die.
He'll get trauma.
He'll die inside.
Or when a team composed entirely of little people failed to install a Hayabusa motorcycle engine into a three-wheeled Peel Trident microcar. He dismantled it with a 50-caliber sniper rifle.
Oh, no, that was a different one that we were watching.
Oh, it was a different. No, well, there was another one that was like a dune buggy convertible, and they shot it with a minigun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was like a lot of rounds.
Yeah, it was a lot of them. Sparks flew around Jesse and his motley crew for 80 episodes over 5 seasons before he became too busy with other commitments.
Dude, imagine doing this ridiculous show and also running a business where you make like good choppers.
Yeah, that's insane.
It feels like these types of shows are everywhere today, but Monster Garage was a truly groundbreaking show for reality TV. There were direct imitators, of course, like American Chopper and Pimp My Ride. But before Monster Garage, reality TV was dominated by high-concept, competition-based formats like Survivor or celebrity-driven shows like The Osbournes.
Jared!
I love The Osbournes.
That's more like Brad Garrett.
Yeah, that was.
Jared! Everybody loves Jared.
I love when he was like, Jared! Dickheads pissed all over the carpet, and it's dog.
Yeah.
That was great. You are on your accents today.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Whereas I'm just always on Brad Garrett mode.
Or like when he was like, Sharon, someone took my beers. And Sharon's like, you drank them, Ozzy. The show immediately struck a chord with a large audience, particularly blue-collar workers, mechanics, and automotive enthusiasts
and
who
like
saw themselves...
10-year-old boys like myself. Yeah.
Who saw themselves reflected on television for the first time. And thus, it paved the way for the male-driven, gritty, work-class genre that became a staple for networks like Discovery and History Channel for years to come.
Oh, yeah, dude. My buddy who got married this weekend,
Cody,
a few members of his wedding party, which I was also in, they all became friends because they were working on a fence crew. They'd be out in the middle of nowhere building fences on like the side of mountains and stuff. Like they went to
Really get to know your coworkers when you're on the side of a mountain.
Yeah, they'd be flown in on helicopters sometimes and dropped off to work, build a fence on like a 88 degree like hill.
I always wondered how those fences get built.
I was like, dude, if you guys were working in like 2005 on this fence, like you would have had a TV show.
Yeah, it's about their like interpersonal relationships. Yeah. And they're like, I know we're building fences, but I really want to build bridges.
Yeah. I know we build fences together, but I feel like I'm breaking down one between us.
That's how bromances start, dude. Guys really bond over some shit like that. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean,
because they don't like to like look at each other and have conversations, but if they're like doing something and not having to look at each other,
that's like half the stuff that happens in the garage here. It's like shared misery builds a very great bond.
Yeah.
I believe that. Yeah. We talked about that last time. I think.
It's called trauma bonding.
Yeah. We should encourage that in the workplace.
We should. Okay.
Monster Garage wasn't just revolutionary because of its focus on working class heroes. It was hugely influential in establishing a new reality TV format, the expert under pressure genre, which spread far beyond the automotive world to all kinds of industries. Audiences clearly wanted their interests reflected on screen. We're talking Iron Chef, Project Runway, Extreme Makeover, Cake Boss, Ink Master. The concept of watching experts perform under intense pressure is now a ubiquitous format. Tom Beers even spun off the success of Monster Garage into a series called Monster House.
Oh, yeah.
Where a team of builders would turn a perfectly good room of someone's house into an unusable horror-themed installment.
Yeah.
It was real. They really ruined those
it
houses.
It was not. That,
that's crazy.
That was a bit of a miss for me. I remember that. I mean, High Low probably wouldn't be around if not for this show.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah. The whole being under pressure for time is definitely, it's an easy way to build dramatic tension.
Yeah.
Wow. I never thought
it starts kind of getting to you too. Like, if I know I have a deadline for like, let's say 24 hours, I'm like, okay, I could do it. But the minute someone's like, you got a deadline, I'm like, oh shit, I gotta hurry.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
I'm really trying to not be a procrastinator anymore because I wait until the last second for everything.
Oh, me too. I like to say that I perform my best when my back's against the wall. I do not. I just force myself to do it every time.
These work faster.
By the mid-2000s, Jesse's life had morphed into more than just monster vehicles. He was the face of a global brand, a TV star, and more. WCC was pulling in $6 to $8 million annually.
Shit.
And he was earning $3 million a season for Monster Garage.
Wow.
He expanded his entrepreneurial interests, opening a restaurant in Long Beach called Cisco Burger. He appeared in commercials, on late night shows, and as a playable character in Tony Hawk's Underground 2.
I don't remember that.
He moved from screen to print, taking over the custom car and motorcycle magazine, Garage Magazine, and Marvel created a one-shot comic of him. He was featured in People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive issue in 2003. Perhaps this is where he caught the eye of a frequent People cover girl of that era, Sandra Bullock. Yes. The two got married in 2005. He continued to appear on auto and bike-related programming, and in 2009, he was a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice, coming in third place. He hosted another reality show of his own on Spike TV called Jesse James is a Dead Man, I remember this, where he would prepare for and perform dangerous stunts.
I don't remember that at all. What kind of stunts did they have?
Extreme stuff. I remember the title. I don't remember watching the show. Okay. I was more of a Stunt Junkies fan myself, which was also on Discovery. Jesse was riding high, but the wheels were about to come off. The first bump in the road for Jesse came in 2007 when he and his company, West Coast Choppers, were fined $271,250 by the California Air Resources Board, or CARB, for violating California's stringent air quality laws. Between 1998 and 2005, West Coast Choppers sold 98 bikes that did not meet the state's strict emission standards. The engines in the choppers were designed more for performance than for compliance with environmental standards. But Jesse said he thought he'd been in compliance the whole time and was then fined without warning.
Sure.
He told the New York Times that he felt targeted and made an example of due to his celebrity status. Even so, he offered to recall all the bikes and bring them up to code, but the fine stood. While it was a newsworthy situation, it didn't damage his reputation much. He didn't have many fans in the environmentalist community to begin with.
Yeah, I was going to say, he would just garner more support from his chopper dudes.
If anything, One, I like the way he kind of dealt with it. It's kind of this like, oh, I didn't know.
Oh.
It's kind of like when I say, oh, I'm just a girl.
Chris, you didn't put carbs on those? What?
That's crazy.
What are you doing, man?
Yeah, I love that. Sorry. I didn't know. I recall them.
Ah, here's my box of cats.
I thought these were installed.
Yeah. 98 catalytic converters in the back.
Jesse's star began to fall in March of 2010 when it was revealed that he had an extramarital affair with Michelle Bombshell McGee, a tattoo model and exotic dancer. This revelation came when McGee sold the story to a tabloid just weeks after his then-wife, Sandra Bullock, had won the Academy Award for Best Actress for her role in The Blind Side.
That's horrible. Poor Sandra Bullock.
I've been reading about The Blind Side and the real woman that movie was based off of, and that woman sucks.
Not great.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah. She had
a conservatorship over
the football player.
The guy that she like adopted and was just like funneling money off of him.
You know, people actually sent, when all of this came to light, people were sending Sandra Bullock like threats and like being dicks to her.
Come on.
Sandra's
man.
Like, dude, I'm just an actress.
Yeah.
So Bombshell McGee publicly claimed that she and James had been involved in an affair for nearly a year. This news sent shockwaves through the media, not only because of the affair itself, but because it came as such a stark contrast to the seemingly happy, stable relationship Jesse had with Sandra. Sandra Bullock, known for her private and wholesome image, was one of Hollywood's most beloved stars, which only amplified the public's reaction to the scandal. Like, dude.
She's hot. At that time,
yeah.
Even hotter.
Yeah.
It's like, Sandra Bullock, Julia Roberts. How on earth do you do that? How do you cheat on
them? Who cheated on Julia?
I don't know.
Will kill
I'm just
them.
Saying, like, it's at the same level, you know?
Yeah.
So those are America's girls right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can agree with one of them.
I love Gravity.
Gravity is great.
It's stressful.
Alfonso Cuarón?
Yeah.
In the weeks following the affair's revelation, several other women came forward claiming they, too, also had relationships with James during his marriage to Bullock. Jesse broke his silence, taking responsibility for his actions, but the damage was done. The scandal became one of the biggest tabloid stories of the year. Amidst the growing allegations, Sandra Bullock filed for divorce in April 2010, just 1 month after the affair became public.
And when asked for a comment, Jesse said, I thought I wasn't cheating this whole time.
I didn't know.
Out of nowhere. I thought I wasn't cheating.
Making the situation worse was that the couple had been in the process of adopting a 4.5-month-old boy. Bullock's decision to divorce James was widely supported, and she proceeded with the adoption alone. The public sympathy heavily leaned towards her, further vilifying James in the eye of the media and fans alike.
Something tells me he doesn't really care, though. Vilified.
100%. He doesn't give a shit.
Around the same time, another bombshell dropped when a photo surfaced taken.
And it wasn't Bombshell McGee this time.
No. This one was taken in 2004 of Jesse wearing a Nazi hat and doing the Heil Hitler salute. He vehemently denied any ties to Nazis or anti-Semitism and insisted that the photo was a joke. His lawyer explained that the hat was a gag gift from his Jewish godfather, Weiss, from Storage Wars. But with his reputation in a tailspin, this only added fuel to the fire. Jesse checked into rehab for childhood and anger management issues. And that was around the time that I was like, okay, I'm not on the Jesse James train.
Hey, maybe I shouldn't like Jesse James.
Yeah.
So soon after all this, Jesse's Spike show was canceled. And later in 2010, he shuttered West Coast Choppers. Now a pariah in Southern California, Jesse moved to Austin, Texas, where he reopened West Coast Choppers there in 2013.
That seems to be a trend. I'm too problematic for California. I'm going to Austin.
Yeah. Today, Jesse still lives in Austin with his fifth wife, Elena, more commonly known as Bonnie Rotten, the adult film actress.
Wow.
He hosts a YouTube docuseries on the Chopper Town channel called Austin Speed Shop, where he teaches viewers and shop employees about metalwork and fabrication for motorcycles and hot rods. He said in a recent interview that he's not really interested in building custom bikes anymore, having built over 500 in the last decade plus.
Wow.
His new passion and fascination is manufacturing guns.
Oh, great.
Wow.
And the process is recognizable. Just like what happened 25 years ago with the tire fenders, he took a look at some guns he bought and thought, hey, I could make something better than this. The first pistol he customized was purchased by a prince in Kuwait.
Wow.
And just like WCC, he plans to make a select few for private clients while manufacturing parts for the military.
Oh, boy.
The difference, he says, is he considers this to be a, quote, higher calling, creating something that Americans and soldiers can use to protect themselves. Jesse's life is quieter now, except for gunshots and engines. Far from cameras and red carpets, the trappings of fame that sent his life off track. Love him or hate him, he doesn't seem to care. He's back to doing what he loves, working with his hands and making metal sing. So that's the story of Jesse James.
The vision that you get of him on screen seems to be very analogous to what he is in real life.
He doesn't hide anything, I think.
Yeah. And there's a certain charm to that, but there's just too much like murky water to be a fan.
Can't really abide by the Nazi stuff.
No.
Yeah.
That's a hard nope.
Hard sell to get back on that train for sure. So interesting story though.
What a roller coaster of a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really.
It makes me respect him more, like for his entrepreneurial spirit and the stuff that he actually did.
Yeah, that's pretty
cool
about him, but that's it.
That's about it, though. That's where I draw the line. And you go against Sandra, you got a problem with me.
Damn. And you don't want a problem with Joe.
No. I'll whip you. Okay. All right, we got some listener mail from Ryan. Hey guys, greetings from Iowa.
Hello, Iowa.
Hi.
You three got me into podcasts, so thank you. Been catching up on all the past Gas and Big Three shows over the last month. I'm almost all caught up. That is unhealthy.
Thanks, dude.
You got to take some breaks. Nolan, as a fellow Mopar guy, how about an episode on Norm Krause, Mr. Norm, and all of the badassery surrounding him? Also, Walker Evans and his racing history. Lastly, non-Mopar enthusiasts may enjoy a show about the great Keith Black and what his brand stands for today.
Absolutely. My great uncle and my grandpa actually worked for Keith Black, so that'd be cool.
Okay. Regardless if you do episodes on these legends or not, I love what you guys have going. It keeps me entertained as I rebuild transmissions at work. Keep the train going, Ryan.
That's a catchphrase right there.
Ryan. Keep the train going.
Keep the train going. Yeah. Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah.
Those are great suggestions. We'll probably put them into action.
On our spreadsheet for sure. Thank you so much. If you want to send us an email, hit us up at passgas@donutmedia.com. We might read it on the air like we just did for Ryan here.
If you want to send us a snack for Rodent Snack, I love that name, by the way, send it to P.O. Box 84, Inglewood, California, 90306.
Oh, yeah.
We'll review it on air.
That'd be fun.
Live.
Make sure you follow Steph at @radical_Steph. Follow Joe at Joe G. Weber. Follow me at Nolan J. Sykes if you'd like. Let me start posting stuff again. Kind of fell off. Low key. Big thanks to the crew. We got Edgar Grajeda and Audrey Holden. This episode was written by Sam Clemmer. Spread the word. If you like this episode, this was a really fun one.
Yeah. Spread the good word of Pass Gas.
Share it with someone you know. Pass Gas forever. See you later.